Chemical Watch podcast.
Unlock the full value of your compliance and product stewardship with world-leading insight and intelligence from Chemical Watch. To find out more or request a demo, visit chemicalwatch.com. Chemical Watch, intelligence to transform product safety.
Hello and welcome to this week's news podcast hosted by members of the Chemical Watch team. I'm Charlotte Nemec, news editor, and for today's episode I'm joined by our North America desk editor Kelly Franklin and Europe reporter Clelia Oziel. Today we'll be talking about a potential compromise solution from UK ministers as they seek to end an ongoing dispute over costly UK REACH data requirements. This would require industry to submit some extra data, but not full data sets on all grandfathered substances. But first, let's turn to California, where the Department of Toxic Substances Control has been preparing to name PFAS-containing carpets and rugs its next priority product under the state's Safer Consumer Products Program. The DTSC says it is on track for the regulation to take effect on the 1st of July. This will trigger a requirement for manufacturers of these products to either exit the California market or conduct an alternatives analysis to determine if safer options exist. The program is unique in that it not only uses alternatives analysis to identify opportunities for designing safer products, but also gives the DTSC the authority to regulate products once that analysis is complete. The state, however, has yet to reach the regulatory response stage for any of the first three priority products under the program, a fact that's leading some to question whether the scheme is the best tool for managing chemicals of concern in products. So, Kelly, can you tell us why there has been no regulatory action in the case of the first three priority products under the program?
Thanks, Charlotte. It's a good question with a bit of a long answer, as we've seen a range of different outcomes for the first three priority products. Back in July 2017, the DTSC named its first priority product, and it covered children's sleep products, things like nap mats, bassinets, play yards, containing the flame retardants TDCPP or TCEP. What was interesting about that priority product, however, was that manufacturers were already well on their way to phasing out those substances amid concern about the human health effects they pose. And ultimately, the DTSC received no product notifications, means basically that products containing those two flame retardants were no longer on the market by the time the listing took effect. California subsequently conducted compliance checks to ensure that they truly were phased out, and those checks all came back clear. So on the one hand, this meant that the concerning substances were no longer present in those products. But on the other hand, it meant that a priority product listing that took a few years to implement didn't result either in an alternatives analysis or a subsequent regulatory response. Fast forward to a year later, and the DTSC designates spray polyurethane foam containing unreacted methylene diphenyl diisocyanates, or MDI, as its second priority product. This listing brought a lot of pushback from industry, though. The American Chemistry Council filed an informal appeal to overturn the listing, which the DTSC denied. Then they underwent the formal appeals process that also ended up with a denial. After that, the ACC filed a lawsuit to try to overturn the listing. While those court proceedings played out, industry started in on the alternatives analysis process to comply with the program requirements, which did remain in effect during the legal challenge. In the case of spray foam, industry completed what's called an abridged alternatives analysis, one you conduct when no viable alternatives can be identified. Ultimately, the spray foam manufacturers completed the alternatives analysis process and, just a few months ago, got a notice of compliance from the DTSC. Normally, that notice of compliance would be the trigger for the DTSC to begin mulling its regulatory options. The SCP program gives regulators a wide menu of options to choose from. They can impose engineering controls, require product information to be shared with consumers, they can put in place use restrictions or even prohibitions on product sales, or they can choose not to regulate a product. But just around the time that the manufacturers achieved a compliant AA, the court handed down a decision that said the DTSC had made a misstep in the listing process. I won't get into all the details of the case here, but in broad strokes, the court largely rejected industry's objections to the priority product listing, but it did side with ACC on the issue of whether California had failed to comply with a state law known as CEQA, which requires it to evaluate the potential environmental impact of its listing decisions. So the court has sent this issue back to DTSC to remedy, and the department has temporarily suspended any further action on the priority product in the meantime. How this will all play out remains to be seen, as both the ACC and California have appealed the court's decision, but at least for now, it means we won't see a regulatory response. That now brings us to our most recent priority product, paint or varnish strippers containing methylene chloride, and that took effect January 1st, 2019. This was a product that, at the time of its designation, was already facing a lot of pressure. There was a TSCA risk evaluation underway for methylene chloride, a proposal from the US EPA to ban paint removers containing this solvent or the replacement solvent NMP, and many retailers were proactively taking steps to stop selling the products. This was all amid an NGO campaign focused on consumer and worker deaths associated with their use. So in this environment, the Safer Consumer Products listing took effect. But within a couple of months, the EPA finalized its methylene chloride paint remover ban, although it's important to note that prohibition extended only to consumer uses. So that left a handful of manufacturers of commercial paint removers still selling in California. And those manufacturers did forge ahead with the alternatives analysis process. As a first step, they filed a preliminary AA. But the work that supported the development of that document used up all the money the industry consortium had saved up to comply with the program. And when it came time to devote additional resources to complete a final AA, manufacturers elected to pull their commercial products from the market and abandon the effort. So here again, we have a priority product where we didn't get to that final step, and we therefore have yet to see how DTSC might apply its regulatory authorities.
Thanks, Kelly. So I understand industry has also raised concerns about the cost of completing an alternatives analysis and a lack of clarity around this process. Can you tell us more?
Sure. Since the program's enactment, industry has raised concern that completing a regulatory AA would be a costly process, and they worried that they lacked sufficient clarity for how they could ensure compliance with program criteria. Now, it's important to remember that we've only seen two alternatives analyses under this program, and only one of those was actually completed. But the early reports from the consortia that worked on those assessments indicate there was a lot of confusion about what the expectations were. Both industry groups, for spray foam and for paint removers, hired an outside consulting firm to run the project. But there still seemed to be a lot of back and forth with regulators at DTSC to try to determine what components needed to be included to ensure compliance. Also, the process is expensive. The DTSC has estimated the AA for its upcoming listing of PFAS-containing carpets and rugs will cost somewhere in the ballpark of $115,000 to $300,000, according to an environmental impact analysis it released late last year. And that alone could be a driver for some companies to elect to pull their products rather than go through a process that, remember, could still see DTSC impose restrictions or bans at the end. Now, to be clear, there are some who argue that companies electing to drop out of the market rather than comply with the program is absolutely in keeping with the mission of the state's green chemistry law. Some of the thought behind the state's legislation was that if you put a scarlet letter, so to speak, on a certain substance or application, the market will shift away from that application rather than comply with the costly process of completing an AA and the regulatory uncertainty that comes at the end of the process. But nonetheless, many in the environmental community have still been really disappointed in the program and the speed at which it's tackling concerning substances. It's now been more than 2 years since the DTSC named methylene chloride paint removers as a priority product, and we haven't seen another product designated since. A lot of NGOs would like to see the program moving much, much faster to take action on concerning chemicals that show up in everyday goods.
So industry is unhappy with the potential cost of the process, and NGOs are unhappy with the lack of regulatory action. What does the DTSC think it's achieved since the program started, and what does it hope to achieve with its fourth priority product?
Yeah, it's a good question. The DTSC told me that they feel the first three listings have yielded positive results. We've got two concerning flame retardants that are no longer included in a variety of children's products, and methylene chloride paint removers are fully removed from the California market, including for workers. That's something that isn't the case elsewhere in the US. Looking ahead to the upcoming work on PFASs, the DTSC is taking an ambitious approach to tackling a group of substances that are the subject of a lot of concern across the US. Other states and regulatory programs are largely looking to address specific PFASs that are particularly concerning to human health and the environment. But DTSC scientists said in a February paper published in Environmental Health Perspectives that PFASs, quote, cannot be effectively regulated in isolation, end quote, and that taking a class-based approach could drive innovation toward developing safer alternatives. And the Safer Consumer Products Program's focus on the substance class isn't limited to rugs and carpets. The department also has signaled plans to address PFAS-containing food packaging, as well as textile and leather treatment products containing PFASs. But tackling this broad substance class won't be without challenges. The ACC has been a vocal opponent in California and elsewhere against the concept of regulating PFASs as a class. So it's certainly possible, if not likely, that we would see some appeals and a potential lawsuit over this listing, much like we saw with the spray foam listing. It's not unexpected in the US to see a lot of litigation surrounding the implementation of relatively new environmental statutes. Certainly, if you look to the TSCA program, for example, we're seeing lawsuits challenging all sorts of aspects to how the EPA is interpreting the law. But the net effect of this could be continued slow progress for the DTSC's program. And that, in turn, could be a driver for environmental groups to use the state legislature rather than the Safer Consumer Products program as a more expedient way of addressing chemicals of concern in products.
Thanks again, Kelly. That sounds like it's definitely one to watch. So now let's turn to the potential compromise solution with regards to data under UK REACH. Currently, under the regulation, industry would be required to re-register tens of thousands of substances in the EU REACH database with full data dossiers, a requirement that industry estimates will cost around £1 billion. But the compromise solution ministers are offering follows a demand in February from 25 UK industry associations and downstream user groups. They called for the government to drop its requirement for duplicate data sets of all chemicals under UK REACH and instead adopt a new approach that prioritises substances of most concern. So, Clelia, what can you tell us about this plan that UK ministers have come up with?
Hi, Charlotte. It appears that this new solution is something that DEFRA and HSC, the Health and Safety Executive, which is now the independent authority on UK REACH, have come up with together as an alternative to that industry proposal. Essentially, what they're looking for is to achieve a compromise that would be acceptable to all parties. So the government, the UK authority, and also the industry and NGOs. Now, let me give you a bit of background on this. With Brexit, ministers basically backed themselves into a corner on chemicals. On the one hand, they need an industry that is nimble and competitive so that it can survive and succeed in a post-Brexit world, not burdened with additional regulatory costs that would drive many to bankruptcy. On the other, they believe sovereignty was the whole point of Brexit, so the government should have all the tools necessary for independent decision-making. For chemicals, this is data. So one of the key principles of REACH is no data, no market. This means that the regulator should have all the safety and use information on all of the substances placed on the market, irrespective of the level of concern or whether they have been previously registered with ECHA. Anything less than that would be a breach of that principle. This is why we understand the ministers have not been so enthusiastic about the industry proposal, even though they have not rejected it outright. Under that proposal, the UK authority would have to rely on publicly available information, nothing more than that, on the vast majority of some 23,000 substances that have been registered with ECHA. So the solution they've come up with would give them some more data on these substances, presumably enough for an independent database of some sort, but it would be less than full data sets, which is the current requirement under UK REACH. We don't know the full details of what they are proposing. For example, how much and what kind of data would be required? What are the costs? Does it mean companies would still need to acquire it from the consortia of data owners, something that they are really not very keen to do? Also, does it mean that UK REACH would need to be amended with a new statutory instrument? We don't know the answers to these questions yet, but I think it will all become clear in the next couple of weeks. One thing to add is that the two sides have agreed that for any new substances to be registered in the UK, or those that are of significant concern, for example, CMRs, PBTs, etc., full data sets will be submitted. There is no disagreement there. So these discussions concern everything else, which really still make up the vast majority of those 23,000 substances.
Thanks, Clelia. And what has been the reception so far from stakeholders?
So currently, industry and DEFRA officials are engaged in working group discussions to flesh out the full details of this idea and to see if it is workable and affordable. This follows a meeting on the 19th of April between senior government ministers and industry leaders, where the idea was explored. One industry source close to these discussions told me that it is less burdensome and less costly for industry than the current UK REACH requirement. But this suggests that there would still be an additional cost, albeit much less than the cost of acquiring full data sets. But another source said that publicly available information should still be sufficient, because otherwise, they say, the whole point of the discussion is to avoid companies having to approach consortia and pay for data. So if they still have to do that, then what is the point? So there is a lot of uncertainty at this stage, and industry is trying to gauge what kind of data will be needed and at what cost before it can say whether it will agree to it or not. But the sources have told me that if the choice was between the current UK REACH requirement of full data sets or going with this compromise solution, then they would be inclined to accept this solution. Now, the position of the NGOs is less clear. They have previously objected to reduce data submissions, saying this would weaken the legislation and diminish the government's ability to control hazardous substances. Chemtrust has been the main NGO leading this campaign, and they believe full alignment with EU REACH in return for access to ECHA's data is the only way forward. But they have also floated this Swiss model as a possible alternative. Under this option, the UK would follow EU standards without requiring a duplicate registration, but also reserving the right to take a different stance if necessary. Now, regarding the government's new solution, the NGOs say that they have not seen this yet and therefore are not in a position to comment. They are waiting to hear from the government to schedule a meeting to discuss all of these options. But from the government's point of view, the NGOs really need to be on board for this. Otherwise, it may be difficult to respond to criticism that they have watered down the UK legislation.
And what's likely to happen next?
So a final meeting of the DEFRA Industry Working Group is scheduled for the 5th of May. And I think we will get a decision on this soon after that. DEFRA has been conducting separate bilateral talks with industry and NGOs, although NGOs say that they've only had one meeting in March and nothing since then. So they're very keen to sit down with the officials to discuss these options. One industry source told me that maybe all three sides could get together and agree on a solution. But whatever happens, I think a decision is now imminent, perhaps within the next couple of weeks. It is important to agree something soon, as the clock for these data submissions will start clicking after this Friday, which is the deadline for the grandfathering of EU registrations. Although I have also heard that the government might be considering the timescales for these data submissions again. Currently, they range between 2 years and 6 years, but we don't know if they're going to be, these will be changed again. So to sum up, Charlotte, everything is still up in the air, but there is some hope that an agreement will be reached soon.
Thanks again, Clelia. That brings us to the end of today's episode. Thank you again to Kelly and Clelia for sharing their insight with us. And thank you to you, our audience, for listening to today's episode. If you'd like to find out more about the topics from today's discussion, please head over to the Chemical Watch website at chemicalwatch.com. And if you'd like to find out more about UK chemicals law following Brexit, why not join us for our UK Chemicals Policy and Regulations event taking place on the 19th of May. This is a one-day virtual conference where government officials, NGOs and industry representatives will come together for presentations, discussion panels and Q&A sessions to discuss the future of chemical regulations in the UK. You can find out more at chemicalwatch.com. Until next week, goodbye.
Unlock the full value of your compliance and product stewardship with world-leading insight and intelligence from Chemical Watch. To find out more or request a demo, visit chemicalwatch.com. Chemical Watch. Intelligence to transform product safety.
The Chemical Watch Podcast.